our good buddy Robert T. Green, the CEO at Pre-Post Game. And, Rob, I want to welcome you to the show this evening, man. I thought I'd check in with you to see what's going on as we're about to kick off the start of the college football season. And you know, it's kind of funny. Not really funny, but it's some irony there, talking about the business of sports, that these college teams, you know, Houston may be flooding, but these college teams are going to go somewhere and practice, because you got to get those games in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on again tonight. How are you doing, Mr. Robertson?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, brother?
Good, thank you. Good. I know you guys are short on time, but, yeah, the college football season is coming upon us, and I was listening earlier to you guys when he was speaking to Mr. Rob Parker and talking about Jim Brown and, you know, obviously what's going on, thoughts and prayers with Houston. I actually was playing in arena football August 27, 2005 in Bossier City when Katrina actually started. We went into the game that morning. It was sunny. I had no idea about, you know, athletes, we don't watch the weather report, so nobody told us anything. By the time we came out, and I couldn't hold myself up. Long story short, that actual arena was the home for a lot of people for about 7 months. The floor flooded, but apparently they kept the seats open and let people in from there. So it's a blessing, and like I said, I thought some prayers with that. But regarding the sports business, and I mentioned to you, Ricky, about reality is of college football, and you see things going on in the NFL right now with Ezekiel Elliott and his suspension. A lot of different things that go on when you talk about the money that's getting paid to Matthew Stafford and talk about Colin Kaepernick and the players' union and the representation. What people don't realize is that, you know, all these things that come about in the pro level didn't just start there. It starts way before that. For example, you know, you hear about the concussion settlements. Anybody really believe that concussions just started happening once all these grown men who was professional athletes and that know how to hit start happening in the National Football League? Does anybody want to believe that these men that are making multi-millions of dollars all of a sudden started failing drug tests when they are grown men and got families to feed now? Absolutely not. So, like I said, again, this thing is a lot more than what you want to realize. Institutionalization at the highest level. People use the term team and want to talk about what the team is about. But the team is really supposed to be about when everybody comes together to accomplish one common goal. But if you go and look at, again, the Matthew Stafford contract, and God bless him for getting that money. But for the team, how does that really affect the team when you know it's a salary cap and he really must have took up 25% of the salary? So once again, you talk about Colin Kaepernick, why he really is in the situation that he's in. It's not so much the fact that he's African-American, in my opinion, or he took a knee. It's the fact that he's a quarterback. And when it comes to the business of sport, the quarterback is actually the face and the spokesman of the team. And so literally when you step outside that line, there's a lot more to protect in regards to the business standpoint, according to with the owners, than just the actual cause. So like I said, when a Marshawn Lynch sits down on a cool and Ben's sitting down, well, he's not a quarterback. And so literally those type of guys are expendable when the pay scale in the National Football League is basically set up where 75% go to 52 players and 25% go to the 53rd. Which happened to be a quarterback. So you can break that down from an actual.
I think that's a hell of a point you just hit there. So are you saying that if Cap was a right guard, that he'd be playing today?
Right. Absolutely. There's no question. Because once again, you have to keep, if you will, the quarterback is the face. He's the one that gets paid. He's the one that literally, if he makes a decision to do something, his pockets are not going to be hurt. The financial structure and the rest of it, when I talk about 80-20, you got 20% of the athletes that make 80% of the salary, so it turns into a crab barrel mentality. They don't have a leg to stand on. They turn around, you got 80% of the salary made by 20% of the players, which they pretty much are taken care of. But the top 20% is usually high-profile quarterbacks. So literally that you can't turn your back or your blind eye on that. That's kind of what I talk about in college football with some of these so-called, and I apologize because I've kind of got a little fed up with this based off of certain scenarios where you got a lot of, you know, college quarterbacks and coaches in particular where, you know, the quarterback is the only position that can usurp the coach's authority. Meaning, like, if the quarterback says, nah, I'm not, this isn't working, that kind of goes against what the coach saying. You can lose your team, if you will. So this is how a lot of times we talk about the term team again. If I'm doing something that don't make any sense and the guy next to me is doing something that don't make any sense, then I'm not making any sense. I'm not going to question anything because we're all doing it together as a team. So now you institutionalize the thought process and no real change happens. So a lot of people are not willing or basically even capable of stepping outside that lane, because the reality is when it comes to what's really going on, these young men that are now professional athletes, they've been in that mental capacity or that institutionalized thought process way longer than before they got to the National Football League. And they've been taught and they've been guided and they've been directed one certain way. So you might have one or two or three that'll step outside that lane, but as a whole, you won't have that happen.
All right, let's go back to what you said about, you know, Kaepernick being the face and, you know, stepping out of the lines with the political stuff. What about, why wouldn't someone like Brady take a hit for having a Make America Great hat in his locker room and not go to see, make a political statement by not going to see Barack Obama when they won the Super Bowl? And, you know, he kind of cleaned it up a little bit by not going to see Trump. But still, it was kind of apparent that New England and the face of the team is, you know, a Republican or a supporter of Trump. So why did he take a hit for basically being political?
Because once again, if you really know the history of the New England Patriots and their football franchise, they were terrible before Tom Brady got. They were absolutely horrendous. And outside of the Boston Celtics and when the Boston Red Sox had their miraculous comeback or they beat the Yankees way back when, the history of the Boston franchises before Bill Russell and them from that era was horrible. And so literally once that scenario where the Patriots started winning, you know, it was kind of like a long, I don't want to call it a leash or rope, if you will, that these guys were basically untouchable. As the NFL continued to build their brand and their model based off of, saying, a land opportunity, a guy like Brady, who was a six-round pick, I think he was 199 overall, had a terrible body, wasn't even highly recruited. The fact of the matter is that whatever he did, for the most part, without doing something that's just completely disgraceful, they was going to support him in any scenario. That's why pretty much when it came down to the Flategate, it was such a huge deal between both sides because they never saw that coming. I tell people all the time about sports, it's like they ask me, is it about winning or losing? I said, no, it's only about two things, and I'll say this again. It's about selling tickets and recruiting. It's an entertainment. You talk about the fight with Mayweather and McGregor. All these different things that you put in people's minds and what you watch and see on TV. And like I said, college football is coming up right now. Oh, everybody's got 130 teams and everybody's excited. The reality is over the last 10 years, only three teams have won championships. But you got hundreds of thousands of kids being recruited under the same umbrella. You come here, you're going to win a championship. You come here, you're going to go to the NFL. You come here, you're going to be a freshman All-American. The kids that are going to do that regardless of where they go to school at. That's where the problem is.
Absolutely.
Because literally people are basically telling them, yes.
Rob, let me just cut in right quick.
No problem.
Because I want to let our internet audience know that if you want to get in, we're going to go a little longer with Rob tonight. If you want to get in, you can call in at 213-943-3407, 213-943-3407. We're going to go a little bit over time, but you won't be able to hear us on the internet. Okay, go ahead, Rob. I didn't mean to.
No problem, no problem. No problem. So literally, like I said, when it comes to the young men that go to these schools, and when we know 1% only make it to the pro level, whether it's basketball, football, which is the high profit, businesses from sports in this country. But literally, like I said, you still need the other 99% to put on the operation. So again, if you can sell that dream to all these kids instead of focusing on the education that they're really supposed to be getting, that they talk about free education. But like I said, when it comes to the actual classes that they're taking and how do those classes correlate into society from getting a job and making a life for your family, nobody ever wants to talk about that. So that's why my mantra is, like I said, sports is not a game, it's all business. But the reality is unless you start educating, empowering, protecting the family and the athlete at an early stage, I'm talking in 2017, I'm talking 10th grade in high school, because you got these things called AAU, you got these things called showcases. And really the people that are coming around these people, nobody ever sat back when it comes to a coach and say, hey, coach, what's your qualifications? Oh, I won a championship out here in Texas in South Lakes. Okay, we know that's a powerhouse-type school. Okay, they just built a $60 million facility. Okay, they built a $70 million facility. Nobody asked that coach, oh, we got a couple of kids over there that's on a wrestling team that wears leotards. Does that excite you? Or these little girls in this cheerleading scenario, does that excite you? So basically the standard, if you will, of what a coach is supposed to do regarding raising and helping to mentor and guide young men. I'm not saying they're all bad. It's, again, it's like different than the cops. If you're good, you're good. If you're bad, you're bad. But unless the people that are good are willing to out those that are bad, you're going to all get mixed in it together. And that's why, like I said, again, you don't see a lot of people coming out to speak on certain areas when it comes to sports, because literally they have been told one thing and one thing only: play the game, focus on the game, everything to take care of itself, quote unquote, trust the process that does not exist, they don't know about. And literally that makes these kids vulnerable, susceptible to being manipulated or institutionalized, if you will, towards anybody that come around with some type of, dream that they want to buy. So, like I said, again, these young men are really at the pro level in certain cases, have not mentally got to the point where they really can fathom what's really going on outside of the fact of I'm making a check playing the sport. And no athlete, and I speak from personal experience, wants to feel inadequate or about what we're talking about, nor do we want to see the next day our Twitter feeds of people cursing us out and threatening us. Because like anything else with an athlete, the athlete is fighting two different things, and this is their world. That's, I don't know if you know, Ricky, but I was fortunate and blessed that I was just accepted or named the national sports chairman for a company called Friends for Good Health, whereas doctors all around the world that basically go out and provide health care for people that need it. And one of the things that people tend to forget that when it comes to an athlete, mental health is real. And how their mind and how their self-work is attributed is based off the people that they come across from day one. So when I talk about on the left side, you got the fan. So the athlete wants to appease the fan and want the fan to love them and praise them and support them. And then on the other side, you got the industry, the coaches, the league. And sometimes going back to the fan side, the parents are part of the fan side. So the athlete never really realizes who they actually are outside of the game. And now they just basically going back and forth trying to appease people. So when that game goes away, there's a lot of things that they're basically missing out on or really don't understand about who they are as a person, what their social meaning is, who they are outside of the game. So, again, speaking on things such as Colin Kaepernick is something that's way farther away than what they really are capable of doing.
Hey, I would like to go back to something you mentioned about the AAU piece, Rob, and I know you work with a lot of young people. I think a lot of young kids are just really getting conned into thinking if they, spend $7,000-$8,000 over the course of the summer, that they're going to end up playing at Georgetown or UCLA or Michigan State or, somewhere
Absolutely.
Like that they're being sold a bill of goods, man.
Absolutely. So, once again, we talked about, and I had this conversation with a colleague today. I said, you got the NCAA supposedly overseeing the university of such and such, whatever it may be. But the reality is, this is a $1 billion industry in sports with youth. And literally, who's representing them? Who is their voice? And you got all these different people from all these different areas that literally get a hold of a parent. A lot of times when it comes to athletes, you got a lot of urban area kids with single parent moms and things like that. And literally when it comes to sports, a lot of them believe that's the only way to get out, which again, I know because I've been through that. So I understand that standpoint. However, people have figured out that literally with social media and technology, that if you basically present yourself to look a certain way and you take a picture with one person over there, another person over there, if you will be called to watch out for what some of our curriculum stage relationships. So basically connect me to somebody and basically utilize my relationship to get them. I'm going to say this on radio and TV right now, because I again really feel like this is something that needs to be addressed. Now, when you talk about the recruiting process, what's the difference between recruiting and exploitation? What's the difference between a lie and an exaggeration? What's the difference between a prostitute and an escort? It's absolutely nothing. It's all the same thing. But one is considered legal. One is considered illegal. Now, when you got 40-year-old, 50-year-old men basically now in business, basically trying to have conversations of business with kids that are 13, 14, 15, that's a no-win situation. That works all his way up to the pro level. you got 18, 19, 20-year-olds, and it's the same situation. So if the industry, if you will, the universities really want to protect or educate these players, they would have more better classes than taking, like, water conservation testing. That's not going to get them a job in today's world. So once again, nobody really want to talk about what's going on inside of these things. But when they get to the point where Ezekiel Elliott is, they question his character, who he is as a man. Well, whatever Ezekiel Elliott is doing now at 22, he wasn't just doing this yesterday. So let's go back to where it all started. Where are those people at? I watch TV all the time when it comes to these coaches, and they start to distance themselves purposely. I'm worried about them. Or was you worried when you recruited him? Because when you got recruited, what did you use to recruit him? What did you tell him? What was his trip like? Did he go see the dean? Did he go see his calculus class? Did he go talk about how he's going to graduate here in 3 years and what he's going to do when he's no longer going to school? Let's be honest with ourselves. That never happened. You come here, you go to the NFL. You come here, you be the man. You come here, you do this, you do that. And these are young kids that never been told no in a lot of cases. Their mind frame, their psyche is very, very fragile. Now all of a sudden, they get there, and then these grown men, when the mama's no longer around, they start cursing them out, telling them that you ain't this, you're not that, because now they want to basically to redshirt you or not want you to stick with the team. And so these kids' psyches are damaged, and they leave the school, or they make it so far, and then they continue now not to trust anybody. So this thing is really, really deep. And like I said, you know, I'm blessed to be, you know, to be on this panel, to be the sports chair, because later when I talk about the mental health aspect of it, you can't really expect these young men to mature the way they want to unless things start to change at the lower level. So that's why I'm really involved with the youth and actually their parents and basically educating them so they know what to do when they end up getting recruited. And when some coach says to them, well, this is what's going to happen, I'm going to tell them the truth. And then I'm going to tell them how to basically put themselves in the best situation. Not because, okay, it sounds good, it sounds great until you put your signature on there. And then when you ask a question, you don't get that same love that you got just weeks ago.
Wow.
I'm sorry, I know I'm Debbie Downer. You know, it gets deeper. It gets deeper, but yeah, like I said, I've seen it. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, how did they select you? What was the scenario that they said Rob would be the perfect person to do this? How did that come to be?
Well, in my background, one, not only is it being a former pro athlete, but in sports, but in a statistician and a historian of sports, which people know that know me, but I actually have a mental health background. Like I spent about, since 2005, I spent many years in the mental health field working with people. Intellectual and developmental disabilities. Also was able to work my way up in regards to creating BIP, which is behavior intervention plans, and work with youth in the court and the juvenile detention system. And a lot of times the court would literally like release a child or a youth or adolescent to me to basically put a plan in place to help them transition back to their school, to their home with their family, help them to relate to their family to relate to them, and also understand what's going on in their mind and what their surrounding environment may look like. So a lot of times these youth will be misunderstood in regards to what they do. And for me, when it comes to the sports scenario, most of these kids that I had the pleasure to work with love sports. That was the one thing that they can relate to when they wanted to literally be that next best athlete. But whether their grades wasn't good or their behaviors wasn't right, I used to take the sport and I used to tag it with things that go on in life. So literally people say all the time, well, you know, sports teaches you things about life. And it's so vague when they say that. It teaches you about life. What does it teach you about life? You know, I'm going to tell you what sports really does. Sports really does is teaches you how to mass obedience. So what I mean by mass obedience is that if we are playing a game and we're all trying to accomplish the same thing in that game, and we come to practice, we do the same thing to accomplish that same goal, you on the left and you on the right are not going to question what I'm doing because we're all doing this together. That's a fact. So literally, it's the easiest thing ever to do because now you say, okay, well, we come to practice. We all, you know, go to the locker together. We all get taped up at the same time. We all do this at the same time. There's no individuality in any of this.
Yeah.
So now it's a team, but now once again, you get to the pro level, and then you talk about the team, They tell you to take a pay cut for the team, but then you give Matthew Stafford $92 million guaranteed. So, again, you got to really understand what you're getting into. You can't. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Are a guy like Isaiah Thomas in Boston plays his butt off, gets hurt, plays a day or two after losing his sister, and you trade him. And he talks about how he loves being a Celtic. He pours his heart out for the Celtics, Ron and Mike. What they do?
Right.
They traded him.
Now, how does his psyche handle that? How does he handle that? Is he still believing, oh, we are family, and now they traded him, and they say, well, you know, we're sorry it didn't work out. That's why I said, again, it's important for these young men to understand. And it doesn't matter. Again, the business is the business. And my job in particular and what my goal is to teach the families and the athletes, this is business. And you need to conduct yourself in business, not just from a monetary standpoint, but off the field. How you conduct yourself in society. By no way am I condoning with Ezekiel Elliott has done and what he's done and how things happen. But at the end of the day, I also don't condone the fact that the same league that basically is employing him, that's going to fine him for six games, turn around and fine Vontaze Burfict five games for hitting somebody in the shoulder. Whether he did it before or not, the guy wasn't looking. But when you take an African-American athlete or athlete, period, you equate sexual assault the same way we're playing football, you are blurring the lines to the point where nobody can understand what's going on. Because one, at the end of the day, they both going to lose close to $1 million that you can't get back. So at the end of the day, if you care about this league so much, is anybody talking about the fact that before they change the rules, because the CBA is coming up, where Cyrus Mary is going to basically hopefully be running up against Demaurus Smith in regards to players union. I'm hoping myself to throw myself in a certain scenario where I can help out with the players to get themselves to understand what's really going on their behalf. But the reality is, if you go in to sit back and say, you can find these players all this money, are you going to give back the $25+ million for the last 2 years when it came to them dancing? Since you say it's okay now, I don't think you will, because the CBA is coming up. So it's okay to dance today and make more money, but yesterday it was thousands and thousands of dollars of fines. So once again, you want people to respect your authority. You want people to respect what you're doing, yet you have no rhyme or reason for why you're doing anything. You talk about the shield. Again, literally, if a play – yes, sir.
Yeah, but think about it, bro. Think about brothers sitting in jail now for selling weed while people out here getting rich. I mean, wait a minute, man.
Right.
Can we
back now it's legal.
Thing up? Yeah.
Right. That is the point. That is the point. And so, once again, it's all business all the time. And so once these players and these families start understanding that, they'll be better off in these situations. As you guys know, for me, I'm the player's rep, so everything I do and my company does is to benefit the players on the players' behalf and their families alone. I don't make excuses for what the players do. I'm quick to say, you know what, you're responsible for this, but I also know that the whole system that's in place needs to change. And so even when you talk about the NFL Players Association, the reality is that needs to be not in the NFL. It needs to be in the college level. You need somebody – to be doing this for the players before they get to the pros. Because literally understanding that if you're going to be a millionaire, you're a top 50 player, let's be factual about this. If you're a top 10 basketball player, 6'7" in the ninth grade or whatever, and you unarmed All-American, or you might be a one-and-done kid, you know you're going to be paid. So you now all of a sudden now you're going to start – you don't know what a checking account number is and a routing number is. You don't know the difference. But now you're going to wait till 4 months. If you're going to be a millionaire, you got to start learning how to act and how to behave and how to conduct yourself as a millionaire, on and off the field. You don't need to sit back and wait for that. And all these industries or these universities making billions of dollars off of these kids. But like I said, at the same time, the 16-hour schedule, they can't take the time and say, hey, you know what? Me, man, we need to think about these things. Let's talk about what goes on. You're going to put a kid in a dorm room or on a floor where he's a highly rated athlete, and you know how college dorm kids are, but he's on the floor now with co-eds, male and females. You're setting that kid up for failure, whether you want to admit to it or not. Nobody's new. It's not new to anybody. We know what's going to happen. It's going to be one Friday night, one Thursday night, the bathroom is not in his room, it's in the hallway. He's going to wake up. He got to go to the bathroom, and somebody going to walk out there and know his schedule and his time frame, and something's going to happen. True or not true, it's going to happen. Why'd you put him in that situation?
It happens far too often.
Because these are kids. They don't understand where they at, and they trust in the universities and the people that's supposed to be looking out for them to put them in the best situation possible. But it really is, I'll tell you whatever until I get your signature. Then it's like, well, we'll see what happens from there. And that's what a lot of parents don't really understand. And so some people might say, well, what are you exactly saying? Well, one, I've said before, these college athletes and the way sports work now, they should be getting paid. There's no doubt in my mind because, like I said, there's things that I can say right now that literally if I said them on SportsCenter and ESPN, it would get 1 million to 10 million views. I would get hate mail. I would get all types of death threats. It's okay. My skin is thick. I'm not going to change the fact what I'm here to do. But the reality is, you know, the goal is basically to put these kids in the best situation possible so they don't have to be Ezekiel Elliott and now go to the NFL. And now guess what? Not only is he fighting to get reinstated, but this is how he loses out. This is how he loses out. His attorney ain't working for free.
Yeah.
Good. Ain't working for free.
Yeah.
Somebody got to pay him.
Not to mention, who's going to do business with him in terms of advertising,
endorsement,
and things like that?
Nobody. Man. Nobody can. Yeah. But Lucky Whitehead can get cut for something that he didn't do. He did nothing. He got somebody else got arrested. He got cut for somebody else that got arrested using his name. Now
that's
now once again you got a player union, right? And again, where's the players union?
Exactly.
So at the end of the day, what you put out?
Wind this up. Go ahead, Mike. We can end it with your question.
So where is he now? Have you got any information where he is now since the Cowboys?
Oh, Lucky Whitehead is with the Jets. No, he got the Jets picked him up and he broke.
Yeah,
his foot.
Yeah, he got resigned.
Okay.
And he broke his foot.
Wow.
He broke his foot though. So it's like
he's on
injury
reserve.
I
could take cut him.
Yeah, most likely, that's what's gonna happen. But like I said, it's unfortunate. But the money that's in this game, some of these guys don't realize it's not for long. Literally, not just the game, but the money. So literally, they need to be in a better situation on and off the field with their representation. And that goes from the high school, college, and the pro level.
That's some great stuff, man. And you're right, not for long for the money or the league if you're not careful.
No.
And that's good stuff regarding Kaepernick too, because I think you're absolutely right that if he wasn't a quarterback, if he was playing a linebacker or on the offensive line or something, he'd be playing now.
I mean, you look at what's happened in the National Football League over the many, many, many years. And you say he's taking a knee, and once again, for what he took the knee for, and people keep trying to avoid the subject, but what he took the knee for, but he didn't promote it himself. He did it himself. So if anybody, and again, that's not, you know, racist, anybody that's not against equality or things like that, if you really look at what he did, and you can say, well, I'd rather have that other guy that threw that female on the bed with all those guns, or that other guy that basically, you know, making all this money, and he's, again, I think his name was Sam Hurd. He come to find out he was a drug runner and all different things in the Cowboys. Again, Cowboys.
Yeah.
Shocking how that happened again. It keeps happening in Dallas. Didn't Jerry Jones become a Hall of Famer this year? Right.
Yep.
So once again, if I break down the facts of what happened, I'm going way back to Quincy Carter, Michael Irvin, Tutone Jones, Tuane, Newton. It goes on. The recent ones, Gregory, Hardy. So literally, if you're going to say that.
15 years in prison. Sam Hurd got 15 years in prison.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why I don't get upset when a guy like Dez Bryant says something. Why? Because, like I said this before, you guys have mentioned about the political climate in this country. Some people aren't qualified to speak on certain things. And that's why I don't basically pay any mind where I'm not going to let it get to me because literally, if you're not qualified, you're not qualified. So when Dez Bryant says what he says, Dez, God bless you. Some people aren't qualified. And so I'm not, and that's why I said at the end of the day, it's about knowing your stuff, and then when you basically got the opportunity to speak on it, speak facts. Don't speak feeling, don't speak heart, because in business, that ain't going to get you anywhere. It just gets you going in a complete circle and arguments. And I'm not here about arguing. I'm about empowering, educating, and protecting. So that's what it's all about, in my opinion.
Well, brother, we certainly enjoy you checking in with us, man. It's been too long. We'll have to get back and have this discussion again here on the African American Athlete. How can people reach you, Rock?
No problem. So our company is Pre-Postgame, so you can go online and go prepostgame.com, pre-postgame.com. We're a sports business management and advisory firm for athletes and their families. Didn't say what age, because like I said, it's about educating and power protecting. Or you can just hashtag the players rep. That's me specifically. Let you know what we've been doing around the country and what we continue to do. So look forward to being on the show again with you guys, and you guys have a blessed and wonderful evening.
All right, brother. You too.
Thank you, brother.